Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Wednesday, April 12, 2017. The time is 9:03 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
We should be joined shortly by Senator Machicki, who is away on other state business. Welcome, Senator Machicki. On today's agenda, we have SB 88, Alaska Mental Health Trust Land Exchange, as well as SB 34, Driver's License and ID Cards, Real ID Act. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? For those of you joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, the State Capitol Building, room 532 on the fifth floor. If I could direct Senator's attention to SB 88. On April 10th, we heard and held a public hearing. It was opened and closed. We had multiple people testify in support of the bill. There was one fiscal note. We covered it. It was zero. If I could invite Senator Stedman and his staff, David Scott, to the table. Senator Stedman, your name for the record, and any comments we should consider before we make committee discussions on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I appreciate the Senate Finance Committee bringing the bill back for review and hopefully final action. I think this bill will serve this state well going forward, help stimulate our economy, and put the communities in a better position to market tourism and the timber industry in a better position for long-term supply of capital to keep them rejuvenated and moving forward. That, Madam Chairman, I appreciate my colleagues' consideration of this bill.
Senators, are there questions for Senator Stedman? If there are further discussions on Senate Bill 88, for your information, we have the land office at the Mental Health Trust on standby, as well as an assistant attorney general from the Department of Law if you have questions. Are there questions? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Bishop.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 88, version 30-LS0417/R from committee with the accompanying zero fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, Senate Bill 88, an act authorizing a land exchange with the federal government in which certain Alaska Mental Health Trust land is exchanged for certain national forest land and relating to the cost of the exchange and providing for effective date, moves from committee. /R. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork.
Thank you.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record, Senate Finance. Today's date, Wednesday, April 12, 2017. The next item before us is Senate Bill 34, an act relating to the implementation of the Federal Real ID Act of 2005, relating to issuance of identification cards and driver's license relating to data sharing by the Department of Administration and providing for an effective date. On 3/27/2017, we opened and closed the public hearing Multiple people came out to testify on this issue. We have not discussed the fiscal note. We still have additional consideration on the fiscal note before we're ready to move this bill, but we did have questions. Today, we have representatives from the administration to answer questions. If I could change. If I can invite Commissioner Fisher to the microphone, as well as Leslie Riddell. And I'm sure I got that wrong again, Riddell. Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Administration to the table. In your packets, there is a document dated April 17, 2017 that answers questions that we submitted on the committee's behalf. We can start there, or if you have other questions, I will open it up to committee members. Let's start with the questions that we submitted on your behalf. Commissioner, do you have some opening statements that you'd like to provide us on SB 34?
Thank you. My name is Sheldon Fisher. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. I'm here with Leslie Riddell, who's our deputy. Also on the phone, available to answer questions, is Brian Duffy from the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, Marla Thompson, who is the Director of DMV, Mike Stanker, who is one of our attorneys with the Department of Law, and Captain Loudon from the Department of Public Safety. So we're available. We're pleased that you made time for us this morning, and look forward to answering any questions that you might have.
So the first question that we submitted was, what is currently required by Real ID that we are not doing as a state of Alaska? So what is the minimum that we need to do that we're not doing now to achieve compliance with the federal statute?
So there's really two dimensions to that. The first is, today when someone submits certain documentation, primary documentation, we, the DMV, accept that on face value. And the Real ID requires that we validate that information. So whether it's a birth certificate, whether it's passport information, whether it's visa information, we are required to access certain databases to validate that information is correct. We're also required to take a picture at the beginning of the process. Today we take a picture at the end of the process, but we're required to take a picture at the beginning of the process when the person presents the documents, and then validate that at the end of the process so that there's not an opportunity for a person to switch in the middle of the process and a different person present the documentation and receive the license. And so those are the two differences between what we do today.
If I could, I have Dan Loden from the Alaska State Troopers online. Captain Loden, are you there?
Yes, Madam Chair. Also in the room with me is Kathy Monfredo, the Chief of the Criminal Identification and Records Bureau.
Thank you. Captain Loden, is there a reason, or do we have reason to believe that folks are fraudulently obtaining ID in the manner that is being presented by the federal government for this hurdle?
Madam Chair, Captain Dan Loudon with the Troopers for the record. It's been a long time since I've worked cases, so I don't have firsthand knowledge, but I do recall some testimony on the House version of this bill from, I believe, somebody from Motor Vehicles who suggested that they have about five a month where people are attempting to get IDs that shouldn't be.
Captain Loden, is there a public safety reason why a valid ID and the person's image that is on the photo, it benefits the troopers?
Yes, Madam Chair. We use these photographs and the backup documentation for many purposes. We'll create missing persons flyers with those photos. We'll create wanted persons flyers with those. We'll use those in an effort sometimes to help identify deceased persons that are found and aren't readily identified. We use them to create what we call photo lineups. Some people think of them as photo arrays, where we have someone we believe may have committed a crime, and we get photographs of people who look similar, put those together, show them to our witnesses, and have them see if they can identify someone as the suspect. Much like TV shows people doing a lineup, we do that with photographs. The troopers and law enforcement in the field now, thanks to technology that I never had, have access to these photos through their dispatch centers. They contact someone driving or at a crime scene or some other place, and they've forgotten their wallet or their purse. They don't have their identification with them. We're able to ask them for information, their name, birth date, so forth. The dispatcher can pull up the person's photograph because we've kept one, and then email, text, or send that to officer's computer in the car, and that helps them right then to be able to say, yes, this is that person. We have occasions where we have wanted persons that are in other states or other communities, even in Alaska, and we're asking those folks, the law enforcement people there, to help us to see if they can find this person there or whatnot. Well, the first thing that they usually ask for is, well, do you have a picture? And so we use those extensively. We eventually arrest somebody in the lower 48, and we're going to extradite them back from Alaska. We always carry a photograph with us in case there's an escape. We're able to have a photograph that we can give to the local authorities right away to get that out on the news and so forth. The documents we use in a little bit different way, but they help us verify the validity of an ID card or a driver's license that's been issued. If a question comes up later, whether this person's did in fact to get these IDs fraudulently, we can do that. We use these documents and the photographs to help in working identity theft cases, which is growing exponentially and becoming a very real problem. We use them to try and reconcile records from people, criminal histories and driving records and whatnot, when people might have a similar name. And, well, I didn't get that ticket. That must have been the other Bob Smith. We use it for those sorts of things. We get occasions where we might have to try and determine whether we need to move some records into a single file where someone has used an alias or someone has had a similar name and now they have criminal history or driving history with two different names, and we need to try to determine whether we can put those together. So we use the photographs and the backup documentation that goes with them quite a bit, actually.
Thank you, Captain Loden. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, can you remind the committee and the audience of the timeline for enacting the Real ID, that particularly additionally address the implementation, how the transition might take place to meet the requirements once this legislation passed?
Thank you, through the chair. So to kind of put it into context, the Department of Homeland Security has taken the position that without a waiver, individuals that do not have a Real ID compliant license will require some other federally recognized form of ID to access military bases starting in June of this year, and to be able to access flights to get through TSA starting in January of 2018. If this legislation passes, we believe that we will be able to achieve another waiver for the state of Alaska that will allow us a period of time to implement. And right now, we anticipate it will take us through the middle of 2018 to finish that implementation and begin to be able to issue real ID compliant licenses. But because we believe that we'll be able to get a waiver based on the passage of this legislation, there should not be a disruption to the citizens of Alaska during that implementation period.
Commissioner Fisher, thank you for those comments. Did you have a comment?
No, I just wanted to get that on the record for the listening audience.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Hoffman. Vice Chairman Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, with that being said, so if we get implement the bill, passage of the bill, you won't have full implementation for a year out.
Through the chair, that is correct.
So is there going to be any temporary issuance, because we have this summer's work season, what we're trying to get some clarification, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so I've got a two-part question. So that's one, and the second part, if I might, Madam Chair, is there seems to be some confusion on military bases, and I know we have DMVA online, so I had a call from one of my constituents that said, well, Real ID is not going to get us on all bases. So there's two questions.
Commissioner Fisher.
Through the chair. So to respond to your first question, we believe and we've received assurance that if this legislation passes, we will get another waiver. And that waiver will allow our citizens to get on military bases and through TSA for an extended period of time. And we believe we'll receive that waiver through the period that's necessary for us to implement. And so we're prepared to request that waiver promptly upon passage of this legislation. And I think we feel confident that we'll get that waiver and there will be no disruption to using existing licenses to get on the bases during this summer or to access flights after January. And that waiver will continue until our implementation is complete. So I don't think there will need to be any kind of a temporary license or any kind of temporary identification based on assurances that we'll get that waiver. To your second question, and Brian Duffy from DMVA is on the line so he can expand, but according to the material that has been published by the Department of Homeland Security, a real ID will be sufficient to enter military bases.
Could I get confirmation on that, ma'am, from the DMVA?
Mr. Duffy, Brian Duffy, are you there? Senator Bishop would like to ask you a question.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. This is Brian Duffy from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs on Joint Base Omo Ridge up in Anchorage. And to the Senator's question, the answer is not only will Real ID Act compliant forms of ID be sufficient, they will be required. So that is exactly true, and I would agree with the Commissioner's assessment. Over.
Senator Bishop?
Thank you. I just want that on the record so people can hear it. Thank you.
Mr. Duffy, I have a follow-up. Mr. Duffy, we have some of the population that is asserting that if we just do nothing and stand off with the government, that we will get a waiver and those individuals employed on base can move back and forth without any improved ID. Can you tell us how the federal government is going to respond at the gates on June 1st?
Madam Chair, this is Brian Duffy from the DMVA again. So it's important for the committee members to know that federal installations such as Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson are complying with provisions of the Real ID Act right now. Visitors who wish to obtain unescorted access and do not have DOD identification cards or others compliant with the Real ID Act are either being denied entry or required to be escorted by a DOD ID card holder while on the installation. And this includes individuals with driver's license from Maine, Missouri, and Montana, or those with non-enhanced licenses from Minnesota or Washington. So if there is no change in statute by Alaska's extension expiration date of 6 June 2017, Alaska driver's license, and similar identification cards from six additional states, assuming no change from them as well, will simply be added to the list of identification cards designated as insufficient, much like Maine and Montana were added at the end of January 2017. And finally, the installations have no waiver authority for this, and there should be no expectation they would pursue any. Over.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you very much for that. The question is, for that 1 year that it takes, assuming this bill passes, June 1st rolls around, it takes a year to implement it. What's going to happen during that no man land? I know that I think that you just answered it, but during that 1 year before we can actually get the real ID in Alaska up and running.
Mr. Duffy.
So, Madam Chair, to the Senator's question, if that 6 June 17 expiration date it extends to the right to, let's say, 6 June 18, the installations will recognize the current identification cards through that new extended expiration date. Over. So there won't be a no man's land at all. It'll be status quo, just further to the right on expiration. Over.
Thank you. Commissioner Fisher, would you like to follow that up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate, what has to happen to extend that expiration date is we need to receive another waiver from the Department of Homeland Security. And we've been assured that if this legislation passes, we can receive that waiver. We've also been assured that if this legislation doesn't pass, that we should not expect any additional waivers granted.
Follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff?
No, thank you very much.
Senator Bishop?
Madam Chair, thank you. Commissioner, no reason to doubt you, right? But it was those comments from, was it Homeland Security, those assurances, were they in writing or were they in verbal?
I believe, through the chair, I believe they're based on verbal discussions, but I'll let, we've received verbal assurances. But so far, they have, the assurances they've given us, they've lived up to, and so.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, well, first I have a question for Mr. Duffy, Madam Chair.
Certainly, Mr. Duffy.
Mr. Duffy, is a transportation worker identification card, does that meet the requirements of Real ID for entrance, unescorted entrance onto the base today?
Through the chair, this is Brian Duffy. Senator Machicki, the answer is yes. There are about 20 forms of various identification cards that meet the Real ID Act standards at this point. Over.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, for the commissioner.
Senator Machicki.
Just something that's important to some of my constituents. Does this legislation currently, is it optional for Real ID? And if someone chooses to have a regular Alaska driver's license, do they continue forward with the same information they've provided in the past? And then for those that choose to be Real ID compliant, they require going through the system by providing the additional information. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct. So the way the governor structured the legislation was to give Alaskans the choice whether they wanted a Real ID compliant license or not. And if the Real ID compliant license will necessarily need to comply with federal regulations, but the non-compliant licenses would continue either as they have, or there's a number of substitutes that might even scale back some of the requirements and conditions associated with the non-compliant license. But that is the design and structure of the legislation, is to give Alaskans the choice.
Last question, Madam.
Thank you, Commissioner Fisher. Senator Machicki.
And for those, even those workers that require access to the bases, they still have the option of not being Real ID compliant. If they choose so, they can use a passport or a TWIC card or one of the other options that are currently available. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, that would be correct.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Captain Duffy, with the permission of the chair, if you could supply the Finance Committee those 20 alternate forms of approved identification to access post and base, I'd appreciate it.
Through the chair, this is Brian Duffy. I'm a retired colonel from the Air Force as of October. I've got a letter we provided to House State Affairs that's got that listing. We'll be glad to provide that. Over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Duffy. I'm sorry, Director Duffy. Of the 20 forms, Mr. Duffy, that are approved, do those feed into a database?
Madam Chair, this is Brian Duffy from the DMV. I have no direct knowledge of how that works. Over.
Thank you. Commissioner Fisher, do you know the answer to that question?
I don't know. Let me ask, is the question, does the existence of the document feed a database, or do they have to comply with similar requirements for validation to receive the identification? Because my understanding is that these enhanced, all of these enhanced identification documents have similar requirements for validation and assurance that the information is correct. I don't know whether there's a database of every form. I know that, for example, passports, there are a database, and some of the others, I don't know about all 20.
Commissioner, is it fair to say that all the information that is required is the same?
Some documents may require actually more information, but it's my understanding that the minimum is consistent across all these 20 forms.
Does Real ID just require the verification of those?
Yes. So, for example, if a person brings a passport as a primary source, we are validating that passport is valid, similarly with a birth certificate and a Social Security card. So what we're doing is just validating that these primary documents that are offered are, in fact, valid documents.
And so to restate what Senator Hoffman asked about is the administration is bringing forward a possible solution to a problem that our citizenry will face as early as June 1st of 2017 in not being able to use their existing Alaska driver's license or state ID to access a federal facility. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, yes. The date is June 7th. Our waiver continues until June 6th, and so the first date when this may occur will be June 7th. And the first facility that this occurs in Alaska will be the military bases, and that is correct.
And then the second phase for Alaska citizens to be aware of is January 1st of 2018. When our ability to fly could be limited, or the people of Alaska's ability to fly could be limited if they don't have proper ID to access an aircraft. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, that is accurate. The date is January 22nd of 2018, and that is beginning on that date. You either have to have a real ID compliant license or some other form. The one that seems most common for most Alaskans would be a passport to be able to fly beginning at that time.
And so based on the information before us and a request by a bill today, we're trying to access that so we have a waiver to provide us another years of opportunity to actually distribute a real ID to those Alaskans who would like to carry one and to issue the same that we currently do to those who do not want to be part of the requirements of real ID.
That is correct.
And then again, to circle back around, that limitation is going to be the verification of documents that support their driver's license and the retention of those documents, as well as an image at the front of the application process or renewal process.
Madam Chair, that is an accurate summary. Thank you.
Commissioner, if those Alaskans choose not to be real ID compliant, will they face other hurdles in having to represent their verification documents each year, or will they have to come in and not be able to access online applications or use through DMV or possibly other channels without real ID certifications?
Madam Chair, that depends a little bit on the ultimate form of the legislation that passes. The governor's bill that was presented would not have changed in any way the ability for the Department of Motor Vehicles to retain documentation, so pictures as well as copies of the primary source documents that were presented. So if the bill as originally drafted is what is ultimately passed by the legislature, then those who receive a noncompliant license would continue to be able to renew their license or either in person or online, similar to the way it functions today. There have been some who have suggested that we should not retain information, copies of documents or photos beyond a certain period. And if that happens, if we destroy that information, then in addition to some of the benefits that Captain Loudon discussed, we at the DMV would also have to require an individual to re-present their primary source document each time they wanted to renew a license.
It was the State Affairs substitute that was creating that requirement. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Commissioner Fisher.
Thank you. I just want to clarify, today the division, we maintain records by our current process and regulations. We maintain records for 15 years. Real ID requires us to only maintain that for 10 years. And so there is that distinction as well that the committee members should be aware of.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So one of the questions that I have, and this may be more appropriate, Madam Chair, for the Department of Motor Vehicles, do you feel that there may be an increased workload or time of a customer at a window, meaning longer lines and so forth at the Department of Motor Vehicles? Is there any discussion about potentially, because I believe that there are satellite offices right now that do a lot of the DMV work, or even potentially private organizations that will do simpler things like title snow machines, title cars, and so forth. Is there discussions about accommodating this potentially increase in long lines and wait time and processing, and how the DMV might incorporate that in its operations by potentially trying to outsource as an idea some of the lower functions?
Through the chair. So just to kind of put this into context, we are very pleased with the work that the DMV has done over the last 18, 24 months. Our wait times have gone from 45 minutes to under 10 minutes on average, and that has been brought about through what we kind of in the industry call process reengineering. And it's a notion where you try to streamline and simplify the steps and really be as efficient as you can in managing the queue and the line and the things that people are asked to do. And so depending on what ultimately is passed, there may be some disruption to that, and there may be additional steps that we have to employ that may present some additional time that is more associated with just the difference between the two processes and the need to inform people of the two different options and the consequences of the two different options and those steps that may impose some additional time. We will do our best to streamline that, to develop tools that allow people to understand those differences and to minimize the wait time as much as possible. In terms of using third-party and private parties, we have really tried to embrace that as a option for people to have. And so I think if you were to reach out to some of those organizations, they would say that the DMV has become much more welcoming. We really are trying to facilitate their business, help them in any way we can, and would continue to, I mean, we would continue that practice and would continue, if there are other people or more people that want to get into the business of license, providing licenses and that sort of thing, we would facilitate that. And these other locations will be able to issue a Real ID compliant license as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Fisher. Marla Thompson. Marla, do you have additional comments and perspective for Senator Von Imhoff on her question?
Yes, this is Marla Thompson. I'm the director of the DMV, and through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'm business partners we are very excited to work with, and we are currently in a test mode with one vendor doing driver's licenses and IDs, and within the next 30 days we plan to launch more and have a calendar throughout the summer where we will have more options with our business partners. It's a great way for us to help Alaskans.
Follow-up, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you very much, and I'm pleased to hear that business partners, and I'm assuming you're saying private businesses, are able to provide driver's license and then, according to Commissioner Fisher, potentially Real ID as well.
Yes, through the chair, that is true.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I asked the initial question about transition, but say I'm a first-time applicant for getting a Real ID. When I come up to the counter, are they going to require a birth certificate? And if so, what is going to be different about the process that we are currently using to renew our driver's license that a citizen can expect when they come up to DMV?
Commissioner Fisher.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm too anxious to respond. So, yes, when a person receives a Real ID compliant license for the first time, they will need to bring in the primary source documents again, even if they presented those before. And those documents could include one of an original birth certificate, a passport, or other identification, military identification, or a citizen birth certificate from a foreign country when accompanied by certain immigration forms, et cetera. So the first time they will need to present that documentation again, and it will then be validated through a confirmation with these existing databases that we've discussed.
But the time frame, presently, it's 7 to 10 days to get that driver's license. So can they anticipate the same time frame of getting their Real ID?
Through the chair, yes. Because all of that work will be done at the validation portion will be done, you know, when they're in the DMV, and then the rest of the process will continue as it does.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senator Machicki.
Something I want to just sort of get clarified for the record, and this is sort of specifically moving away from compliance with Real ID for military base access and more for ordinary Alaskans like myself that fly on a relatively regular basis. It seems to me that the documents that are required to be TSA compliant post January of 18 all have similar or more stringent requirements than Real ID. I'm a TWIC card holder. I have a passport. all of them have some pretty stringent requirements. So I just wanted to sort of get that on the record of, first of all, can the Department of Administration provide a list for the public of which documents would be TSA compliant for flying alone? And can you comment on whether or not any of them are less require less information than a real ID card?
Through the chair, the list, and this is not necessarily an entirely comprehensive list, but just for to get on the record, the most common one we talk about is a passport. Most of us that travel a lot, many people who travel a lot will have a passport. In addition, there may be a foreign passport that has an appropriate visa will qualify. A permanent resident card will qualify. There are others, but all of them, I think, to your point, all of them require equal, if not more stringent, both process, information, and validation. And so this is plus expense. Forgive me. I should say that a passport, I think, is $135 or something like that. And so there's an expense. There's the wait time. You have to go to and get a photo and then go to another location. And so we presented this because we thought this was a service to Alaskans to have this option.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
One area of concern that I have is that may be true that many people have passports and travel, but I don't believe that to be the case for many people in smaller communities, and many of them may not even have copies of their birth certificates. So how can the Division of Motor Vehicles try to assist people to get the real ID, because they do travel within the state extensively, going to AFN and others, but may not be an international traveler and may not have a passport. So I'm wondering how these people can be accommodated expeditiously.
Ms. Riddle.
Thank you. Chair, this is Leslie Riddle. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. We actually have reached out to DHS as well, Homeland Security, to talk about how Alaska is unique and we have a large rural population. And we might even need a longer waiver if to make sure that we're able to even get out to all the regions and help people to get a real ID, just to let you know that. And then, and I think Marla Thompson can help me on this too, there are options when you come in, if you already have a driver's license, that can also act as a source document too. And I think I know there are Alaskans that don't even have birth certificates. And if I may, Marla might be able to comment on what we do when someone doesn't have a birth certificate.
Ms. Thompson, are you there? And did you hear the question?
Yes. So this is Marla Thompson, and director of the DMV. Through the chair, we would be assisting folks, getting helping them figure out their birth certificate. And I believe we had provided prior on another form some information about vital statistics and how they have a specific process for those that live out in the bush. So I can look into that again and get that. So right now for our primary documents, of course, yeah, I'll have to look at that a little bit more for you on that.
Because I can envision somebody that this is probably would not be an unfrequent happenstance. So somebody is for the first time after the waiver is expired. Somebody wants to go to AFN, travels from say Tuntutuliak into Bethel, and then tries to board the plane, and they don't have a real ID, and they're delayed. And then they go to the DMV and they don't have their birth certificate. So how does that individual go about about that process, because it's going to take several days, I believe, to get a copy of their birth certificate. They would probably have to travel back to their community and be inconvenienced maybe for several weeks. So this is the problem that I foresee, particularly in my district that has basically hundreds of communities that could be impacted and be stranded in Bethel, not being able to travel to Anchorage and having to return to their community.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Commissioner, as a follow-up on Senator Hoffman, I wonder what outreach should some form of the bill that you've presented to the legislature pass, and we are successful, or the administration is successful in a waiver, what kind of outreach specifically will you put together for rural Alaska or those off the road system to come into compliance? Because Senator Hoffman's absolutely correct that there's going to be a different level of awareness of what the federal government has implemented and how we've been non-compliant for many years at this point.
Madam Chair, let us develop a strategy around that and come back to the committee with a more definitive answer to that question.
Thank you, Commissioner Fisher. Senator Bishop.
Yes, just to follow in behind Senator Hoffman and your comments, Madam Chair, along those lines. Commissioner, I'll just lend my support to their comments, especially in rural Alaska, but also urban Alaska. And I'm just going to go back into about 19. I can't remember when the CDL became, you had a window and you could grandfather in on your CDL. Well, I can tell you, without embellishing the story, I didn't know there were so many CDL holders in Fairbanks, because both sides of Pegger Road was lined with automobiles on both sides waiting to get in to get a CDL under that grandfather. Now, this could be the same thing. So as you strategize, I would ask that you, if you need to work back with this committee or to keep us in the loop, because as Senator Hoffman said, you know, we got our hub communities and your DMVs out there, and they're probably not staffed to the degree that they are in Fairbanks, and I'm sure you're thinking about maybe sending some alternate staff out there, because Senator Olson's folks or mine that come in from the rural communities, it's a big ticket item to fly on a plane to come to Fairbanks or Kotzebue or Bethel, and then it's expensive to stay in town if you don't have family. So we're just asking that you do the best that you can to expedite and turn these folks around and as quickly as possible. So thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the list of primary source documents and secondary source documents, the few that kind of jumped out at me was birth certificate, marriage license, and voter ID card. So I would imagine that those will be hot ticket items once if this goes into effect. So I assume that there's been some discussion on your end about how to respond to the potentially increase in requests of those documents.
Commissioner Fisher.
This may, you may need to rephrase the question. Those documents, my department doesn't issue any of those primary documents. And so we actually have been less concerned about a request. I'm not certain I understand your question.
Senator,
I'm sorry.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Then if we can, if there is a discussion of where then would a person go to go 40 plus years ago and get a birth certificate, and 20 plus years ago and get a marriage license, where would one begin to go to get those documents?
So we can it's a good point, and we should probably develop some material that we can distribute to people. Generally, most of those documents are available through vital statistics, and we can and we can start to provide some information to help people with that.
Thank you, Senator Von Hemhoff. And those vital statistics would be departments or agencies in the state in which they were born or the activity happened. So if you were born in Alaska or married in Alaska, Alaska vital statistics would have that information. If you were born in California, you would have to go there to access those particular records. Senator Machicki.
No questions, Madam Chair.
The storage of data has been an issue that the committee discussed several weeks ago. Can you talk to us about what you currently store? And you already said that we store it for up to 15 years. So could you talk to us about that storage and what's stored?
So we store their original application that contains the Social Security number. We store a copy of the primary documentation that has been provided to us, and then we store their photo that was taken at the time. None of that is shared beyond the state, and so it is stored in DMV servers that are behind the state firewall and protected with the various security measures and encryption standards that we use. And so and none of that with this legislation, none of that would change.
Two questions on that point. The first is, who has access to that data? And then the second is, has there been a security breach that you know of that data in the time that we collected it?
So the access is restricted on an as-needed basis, and so depending on different individuals would have different levels of access depending on their need. We also monitor and audit the access, and so if a person accesses your personal information, we get a record of that, we maintain a record of that, and then we audit that so that we are comfortable that people are accessing it in their official capacity and associated with their official duties. We also require background checks and other things for our employees, and this is also true for our business partners, for their employees as well. Sorry, there was a second question.
Has there been a breach of data?
Oh. To my knowledge, there's not been a breach. I would ask Marla Thompson if she's aware of a breach. Certainly during our tenure, there's not been a breach, but I'm not aware of a breach of that data prior to our tenure.
Marla Thompson, Director, Division of Motor Vehicles. Marla, could you answer that question?
Yes, through the chair. Not to my knowledge, has there been a breach?
Thank you. I'd like to take one step backward on Senator Von Imhoff's question about voter registration, marriage certificates, and birth certificates. The marriage certificate and birth certificates go through some extensive processing, both at a federal level if you need a Social Security card changed with a date update, and through vital statistics. Voters registration is somewhat different. And our voter rolls, I'll just assert from my perspective, is pretty heavy with names that aren't at current addresses. And I only say that because when I walk door to door and you pull the voter regs that have been, you've been able to pull voter information. And I have been at least at one house that had four different family names. Now, they could have all been families that had different names, but it appeared that that the database was not updated nor purged. And so I'm wondering if we're going to allow a voter registration card to be used as ID for a real ID, that we need to look at the system that's currently existing in voter registration to make sure that on the input side of voter registration that we have accurate data and that data moves so that that's a valid form of verification.
Madam Chair, so that's a great point. I just want to make one clarifying. We use the secondary documentation to validate their presence in Alaska. Real ID does not require and doesn't demand that we validate that secondary identification a tool. But your point is still a valid one, which is we probably ought to examine whether voter registration is of sufficient reliability to use for that purpose.
Thank you, Commissioner Fisher. The only way that I know that we purge or even assess the voter database is if we purchase the Social Security list of deceased Americans every year and then cross-section it with our data. And in tough fiscal times, because I've spoken with the former Lieutenant Governor about this, and I believe his predecessor before that, I don't know if I've talked to the current Lieutenant Governor about it, but we had been intermittent in acquiring the data of deceased persons based on the cost the federal government was requiring to look at and cross-check that with our system.
Madam Chair, there is one other thing that I understand the state does, and this again is in the Division of Elections, but the legislature passed a year ago legislation that allowed the state to share information with the Electronic Registration Information Center. This is intended to ensure that an individual isn't registered to vote in multiple jurisdictions, multiple states, and that allows the state to share a portion of the Social Security card, the name, address, birth date, and some other information. And so that doesn't necessarily validate that the address in Alaska is the right address, but it does attempt to ensure that an individual isn't registered to vote in multiple states and at least gives us some insight into whether a person has left the state.
Yeah. Commissioner, you're referring to the Electronic Registration Information Center, ERIC. Is that the plan?
Right.
And is the information that we're sharing inside of the DMV similar?
It is very similar. The most of it is identical. There's a couple of things that we don't provide phone numbers or email addresses where the ERIC data does potentially, and the ERIC data requests 4 digits, and we provide 5 digits of the Social Security card. But other than those kind of nuances, generally the information is identical.
So it's fair to say that the legislature has already passed some of the information sharing to improve voter registration.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Fisher, you just indicated or you just mentioned 5 digits of the Social Security number. Can we just examine that subject just for a moment? I think that we've had in our previous, when we looked at this bill, there was some consternation about that. Could you kind of describe what efforts are being made to maybe see if we can lower that down to 4 digits?
Yes. So thank you, through the Chair. This process has alerted us to the sensitivity around the fifth digit, and so today the process that we work through with AMBA, which is this state-managed nonprofit association that helps facilitate the coordination of information, is that we're required to provide 5 digits. We are in the process of reaching out to them and their governance committee, and we will actually be on that governance committee going forward to see if we can back that down to 4.
Further questions? Commissioner, we asked you where in the Real ID Act of 2005 does it require states to enter into this multi-state verification system. It's on page 2 of your response, number 5. Could you share that with the general public?
So the question that was asked is, where is the federal requirement that Alaska use a multi-state verification system? And the response, Public Law 109-13 Division B, the Real ID Act of 2005, requires states to work together to ensure access to data to verify identity. The Act does not specify how this is done, but the CFR Part 37 further addressed the issue of multi-state verification system. And under that, DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, has stipulated that the state-to-state system that is developed by the states through AMVA will meet that requirement. So I guess the point is that we could construct other ways of meeting that requirement. It would be more costly and more difficult, and DHS has confirmed that AMVA will meet that requirement. AMVA stands for the American Association of Motor Vehicles Administration. It's a tax-exempt nonprofit that has been in place since 1933. It is really an organization that is operated and staffed by the states themselves. It's an association that tries to facilitate some of the sharing of information and the processes that we all of the states need to go through to issue valid and appropriate driver's licenses. And as I alluded to before, it has a governance committee that is made up of state DMV directors, and it's recognized by the federal government as a valid and appropriate organization to do this kind of work.
Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
Just a comment along the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, AMVA. Also, that includes the provinces of Canada. Am I correct?
Thank you. That is correct.
Any other questions from committee members on Senate Bill 34, driver's license, ID, and real ID? We've talked about why Alaska is facing a problem. We've talked about the administration's proposed solution. We've talked about security of the data, storage of the data, retention, working through a multi-state software program to verify that people aren't moving between and acquiring residency in multiple states, and that we are accurately describing who is in front of us based on the data we have. Is there any other questions that need to come before the committee? We will continue to work on the fiscal note, so we have something to bring forward to you at the earliest point possible. Is there anything else? We'll set this bill aside. This afternoon at 1:30, we'll be taking up SB 51, Extend Board of Veterinary Examiners, and SB 83, Protect Vulnerable Adults Long-Term Care. Is there anything else to come before the committee? With that, we're adjourned.